Namaste and welcome to the Living India podcast by Purvi Shah Paulini. On business topics and global events in connection with spirituality. Integral and sustainable change means to integrate this aspect on a deeper level as well. Because knowing people means knowing business.
So I'm Purvi.
And I'm Julia.
Yes, and welcome back to our chapter 2 to the Wisdom Workshop. By the way, we have a new, or we just renamed our podcast to the Wisdom Workshop because we are of the opinion, first of all, it's not that difficult to pronounce it, and it includes everything and doesn't exclude everything. So if we talk about ancient Eastern and Western wisdoms and naming it the Wisdom Workshop, it includes everything. Right?
Yes.
Yes. And today in chapter 2, we are talking about attachment, how the materialistic world depicts our limits. Yeah. So I would like to start with a quote of Buddha who said, attachment is the source of all suffering. Or there is another quote said by Vishal is his name, attachment is another name for disappointment. And I have experience in my last years, or let's say 10, 15 years of my journey of development, where I'm still in, and it will never stop, where I have realized when I started with that, that attachment actually causes affliction. And how, I think I repeat myself a little bit from the last chapter, what we talked about, but I think it makes sense to recall it a bit, little bit. How does affliction, or how is affliction caused? To my opinion, it's actually through our 5+1 senses. 5+1, because thoughts in the ancient Eastern wisdoms are also considered as a sense. And which we mentioned, we react on what we like or dislike. And then our external spirit is activated, which is consisting of, the Sanskrit word is manas, the intellect, and ahamkara is the ego. And there is the dominance of the senses, the thinking and the emotions, the willpower, the motivation to perform and function in life. And there we really feed our external self. But doing this, we have not done anything for within. Now, let's exaggerate with the word nothing done for within, for our internal self. What do you think?
So interesting, because you talk about things we like or dislike, and then we are talking about pleasant attachment and aversion. So you also, I think I remember, talked about the circle of life, that we, you know, we are getting born, we live on this world and we leave it again. So we human beings are sort of afraid of death, right? So we are attached to life. And this is like the first attachment we have, most of us have, because we are afraid of death. So life is one of these things we like. It is like one of these pleasant attachments. And these pleasant attachments, we all know, it's like going on a holiday, we are in the mountains, we are on the beach, we think, oh, I want to stay for here forever. Or we are in love with someone and we are thinking, wow, I want to be with this person forever. And this is pleasant attachment, and the moment we realize that we cannot have these things forever, we create behaviors to somehow being able to create a feeling of having these things forever. Like we take pictures with our mobile phone and we put it on the timeline and our social media, and we think, oh, this is forever now. And then we have these unpleasant attachment, and this is not what non-attachment is in Buddhism. It is something else. So the unpleasant attachments are things or situations where we are in, where we rather don't want to be. Like we have a dinner with our parents-in-law and then they annoy us with questions. Or we are in some kind of a job we don't really want to be in, but we have to be there because it pays our rent. So this is an unpleasant attachment because it means that we are attached to something which is not happening. So we create desires. We create desires of pleasant nature, which we want to stay forever, and we create these of unpleasant nature, which we want to change. And we start identifying with what we like. And in these means, we start to create suffering, as you said, suffering. So this is my opinion to this attachment idea. And in the Buddhist term, as you say, the non-attachment means neither to have the desire to do, have, or be something, nor have the desire of not to be, do, or have something. So not being disinterested or indifferent of something, because this also is attachment. Non-attachment is the understanding that all things only pass by. So we let them come, we let them stay for a while, we let them leave naturally. We enjoy the process. And this is also what we have talked about last time in the control thing. So then we don't have a judgment anymore of things that are unpleasant or pleasant, because everything comes, stays for a while, and leaves again. And I think Gaia, our planet, Mother Earth, is the greatest example for non-attachment, because she, as the mother of all life on Earth, lets us get born, evolve, grow, and thrive. She lets us leave again. We are neither indifferent to her, nor would she want to hold us here. So not in our individual being and not as a whole. So we are free, and we can come, stay, and go whenever. And the moment we leave the world, we still stay on the world, because everything that we have brought here in terms of our thoughts, our emotions, the things we have done are somehow still around, you know? So yeah, that's what I want to say.
Yeah, that's very true. What I face in my intercultural trainings, the regular questions when Germans deal with Indians, always say, why are the people so different? I said, well, that's a very general question. But of course, I thought about that. And coming back to that, it's about values and the value system we live in. And values are very much found in the philosophy. So look at Hinduism and the Buddhism in its essence. They believe in samsara, which is totally different to that what we live in the Western world. Samsara means in rebirth. Yeah. So we have to presume, when both of us speak about the Eastern wisdoms, that the listener to this podcast assumes or understands that one of the major differences or the major character of Buddhism and Hinduism is the belief in rebirth, because everything is based on this philosophy. And what is the actual goal in Buddhism and Hinduism of life? And let's also put into bracket of physical life. Yeah, it is not to be reborn at all. So frankly speaking, looking at life on Earth, on this planet here, is considered from the Eastern philosophies actually as suffering. Now we are born, let's make the best out of it, which is a very good attitude towards that. So the question is how to get there, not to be reborn at all. And the answer really in the essence in that is actually detachment, the contrary of attachment. And it is about non-identification.
So yeah. But we need to get out of this detachment thing, because detachment, I think, still is something else but non-attachment. Detachment is being indifferent, ignoring things, you know. So non-attachment is getting out of the attachment in a very nice, respectful, humble, grateful way. So when I talk to people about this, they say, oh, come on, Julia, how can I be in a marriage not being attached to my wife? Then I'm detached. And I say, no. So detachment is like the negative attachment, as you say, the opposite of attachment. And non-attachment is lying in the middle. Sure. So I think detachment is a word which we should not use if we explain how this could be lived, because detached is someone who ignores, who just doesn't want the other thing anymore. And this is also this negative attachment, you know?
I totally agree with you. And I will also use, or let us use the term non-attached.
Okay.
Yeah? Very. Thank you for that.
Yeah, sorry.
It's very important, because I realize how important language is. The moment As we also spoke about that the last time, is the moment you declare or you name something, you exclude many other things, or you mean something differently. And even looking at the terms of self, of mind, of intellect, and so on, it really has different meanings. We'll go into the detail, but it is correct to be a little bit more clear so which way this podcast goes to. Yeah. Now, in order to go ahead, let us presume that there is one big soul, which I said in the Eastern world, people believe in, that there is one big soul from which we all 7.x billion people on Earth derive from. And the individual part of this divine is called Jeev Atman in Sanskrit. Yeah, so I'm using some Sanskrit terms to give the explanation for that. So Jeev means energy of life force, the energy, the life itself, which never ends. And Atman means breath of life. So if you take Jeev Atman together, it can be translated somehow with lively, energized self. Yeah. And this is the part where in Hinduism and Buddhism, people believe in is never dying, is always there, even the moment when we in our physical world have to go, yeah, when we die. So how to realize that our deepest self, so at the end, us humans, are part of this big soul? What is the biggest thing people are doing nowadays in the whole world? It's doing yoga, or meditation is part of yoga. So yoga, which is explained in the Ayurveda, which is again part of the old Vedas in the Hinduism, yeah, is the philosophy of how to realize who you really are. And by realizing that, we're talking about, we can see that our limitations, which we have when we look at our outer self with our five senses that lead us to reactions and to the materialistic world, that the actual abundance, which is also going to be the topic of our next chapter, is to be found there. And it is a process, of course, which starts once we really commit to that. And to my experience, going to the journey to find or to detect the inner self, there's nothing to find because it's already there. You just have to detect. It is a journey which never ends. And in the Western world, and increasingly in the Asian world too, people have lost the connection to themselves, to this inner self, which we were actually born with. Yeah, and everything that is manifest and we can see with our six senses, we do believe in. And since our body is manifest, you know, that is, we always believe in that, what we touch. And of course, it's also part of reality. And if we stop identifying and being attached to our body, we can recognize our inner self. And how to get there, we will speak in the next chapters, because I've already given many terms which are a little bit different and maybe difficult to understand. But I think it helps, because sometimes those people who are already doing yoga, saying namaste and using terms from the Sanskrit, it helps them to understand what it actually means.
And while you speak, I'm again thinking, and I love to think in pictures, you know, so people go not only doing yoga or going on retreats, they also take drugs to find this, to find the way to disconnect their body from their soul in order then to integrate again the body with the soul. And I like to tell my clients that they can imagine that our soul came on this earth with a lesson, and it chose a human body just like we choose a dress every morning when we get up for the day. So imagine the soul chooses us as this human body, and we are being born as this little baby, not having any functioning of our body system, of our language. And we first need to adapt to the world. We need to learn how to move, how to drink, how to eat, how to speak. And being a human being is so demanding on us and so distracting us that we forget about the lessons we have brought with us as souls And while we stumble through life, we come along all these obstacles, all these illnesses, all these problems, also all these joys, all these fun things. And step by step, get back on track to know what actually is the lesson I have to learn here. As human beings, as souls in these human bodies we are now. I think this is a beautiful picture when we think about that, and that we are maybe a soul and a body. There I also have some experiences from clients, which I think I just want to share. It's like, you know, this sudden people who are having these death experiences and then they are alive again. So I have one client as example who jumped down with a parachute from the sky and the parachute wouldn't open. And he fell down, and while he fell down, he says, he separated from his body and he saw himself falling. And when he fell down, he only broke his ankle. And I talked about this with many doctors and also with people who study that. And they told me that the moment you leave your body, the body starts becoming like a ball and it jumps on the floor and you don't hurt because all the structures are soft. The moment you are not separating yourself, you are afraid of dying, you sort of tense, and the tension when you hit the ground kills you. So there are mechanisms of leaving our body. It is possible to separate body and soul, and it is possible to come to join them back again. So again, everything is separated, all is one, and the possibility is there. And this is not the only person with an accident I had who told me this kind of story. So, yeah.
It's a wonderful picture because, I mean, there are plenty of stories who have, or people who have stories like that and who have experienced, I think, near death and came back, or even while having operations and they saw themselves, the doctors and being operated, and wonderful movies are about that where people say it's just Hollywood. But I always believe that those who make those movies must have had some kind of experience, however they got it, with or without drugs and with microdosing, however you call it. But there is something where I also believe, and where I've also experienced in my life in deep meditation states, that there is much more than that, what we can sense with our six senses. And to allow to get there, this is also a task, frankly speaking. It's not that easy to get there because it's the fear which doesn't allow us to get there. If I talk to people, they say, why are you doing that? Aren't you afraid of? I said, afraid of what? I believe in that I'm protected. I'm protected by something bigger. And when I went for Vipassana for the first time, that was for 10 days, I was really scared. And I understand people being scared for them because of not being in touch with your beloved people, with your relatives, or with those people, with your friends. And you are just busy with yourself. 10 days of not speaking, 10 days of no music, of no book, of no distraction of anything, which is really amazing because you empty your mind. And emptying the mind is really not easy. And observing your breath is tiring. I was getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning for the first session and sitting there, I was really energized. But by 12 o'clock, I was dead, not because of getting up so early. It was because it was straining. Yeah. So I think to burden yourself, people see it as a burden to go through this process. People rather go through the burden of life, which they are used to, because people are afraid of detecting things which they might not want to see. And this is very interesting to see that this is the reason. So the people are quite aware of that there might be something much deeper that might come up. That is the conclusion out of the discussions I had with very close friends. They said, I'm afraid. So I said, then you are aware that there are things which are very deep rooted and which there is a pattern which brings you every time to the same point, but you don't want to have a look at it. That's interesting to see that people are very much aware of it. What is actually keeping them back to go forward?
And This is very interesting because now we come to this point of creating behavior in order to let this, let life look real. So we accumulate, we control. It's again the control thing. And here we are again at this creating suffering by identifying with life or with us as group. And then we also need to consume and to have things, to own things in order to feel secure in this life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now I have the feeling that we can bring in someone like Aristotle also, who created this term oikos. So because we are also not only, you know, on the spiritual level, we also want to create this podcast for leaders and for economy. So we can come to this term oikos just for a moment, because it speaks about the responsibility of us human beings of taking the right actions to preserve Earth for all the generations that come after us. So it's about not controlling, not accumulating, letting go, not attaching to the resources of the world. So he already talks about non-attachment when he talks about oikos. And oikos is the fundament of this circularity idea in the ancient Greek philosophy. And it created the terms ecology, economics, and it refers to family, to the belongings, to the homes of the families. And it created the rules we have for the society, maybe even today. So today, Gaia is our home. Our home calls for sustainable responsibility in order to serve our family, which are all beings. And our belongings, all resources, are to be preserved by us. And there we are at the non-attachment idea of Buddhism in a very, 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 let's say, Gaiaistic sense, in the future sense. So all the ancient stuff and today just, you know, fits perfectly in each other.
That's true. And the of course, leadership is then at the end the question, what does leadership need? So it needs non-attachment, and especially from the ego. So if we look at the leaders we have today in many countries or in many enterprises, multinationals and so on, and looking at the news, it's still very much attached to the ego. And once I believe very much we have leaders in the world who realize this and also support this philosophy of non-attachment, I believe that more people are able to live in a dignified world. Now, I'm again creating a romantic view, but we are right now in a position where we have to think about it. If we as humans and as Gaia want to survive on this planet, and I think we need a total different definition of work. It's not to survive the next day, because right now it keeps us really imprisoned and doesn't allow us to unfold our deepest potential, about which we just talked in a very, very short manner. And for example, if world leaders implement, and now I'm taking really the term unconditional basic income, for example, yeah, from the political point of view, that would focus totally on different things than the work itself, because the definition of work, what we have developed in the last centuries, made us slaves of a few people who are then able to live in a very nice way, but the rest cannot live in a dignified way. Dignity to me means to live in a peaceful and happy means every day. And I think, and I believe very much in that, that each and single person in this world has the right for that. Yeah. And this energy of thoughts would be directed if we are able to have this basic income, this unconditional basic income, this energy which we focus on while thinking on how to survive tomorrow, this energy would go and we would be directed to questions like, what is my purpose and how can I fulfill this? Yeah. And again, I said it's a romantic thought, but it's necessary. And by the way, the unconditional basic income is a topic which is implemented since years and tested since years quite successfully. And those people who always say that those who would get money for nothing, because that's the definition of work, if you work, we'll get money. Now we have to have a paradigm shift and a shift in our value system. Yeah, this is really a major shift in the value system. And if we are able to implement this, I think there will be a very big change. And of course, even the enterprises. So economics and politics have to work hand in hand and to really get non-attached to many, many things which we have built up right now and which we love to stick to, because change means some uncomfortable way of living, maybe for a certain time. But this is wherever, whoever has gone through change. And I think, so there is no one who has not gone through change in his or her life, personally, in a collective way or in an enterprise, and knows how it means. But at the end, when you go through it, it makes, to a certain extent, it makes sense. For this chapter, we have really talked very much into the death. It can go much more deeper, but with the other chapters that are going to come, we will be more detailed. And I thank you very much, Julia, for your time. And I'm looking forward to the next chapter, which we can already reveal is about where to find abundance.
Thank you very much as well, Purvi. And yeah, I would love to answer right now to all the questions you have put in the room. And I'm looking forward to the next chapter as well.
See you then. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.